Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Invasive yellow fever mosquitoes are spreading across our region, including in many East County communities. The county wants your help to eradicate these dangerous pests. Find out how to protect yourself on today's show. Now, if you visited Disneyland or other Los Angeles area tourist attractions or the LAX airport in mid-August, you may have been exposed to measles, and we'll have details. On Crime Beat, the CHP is looking for witnesses to a freeway shooting on Interstate 8 in La Mesa. Plus, a local couple is under arrest for the murder of their infant son. On our Capitol Report, hear why major media outlets and even some former Trump supporters are now raising serious questions about the president's mental health. Locally, former Congressman Daryl Issa is gearing up to run for the seat held by embattled Congressman Duncan Hunter, even though he doesn't live in the district. Learn about his voting record, legislative priorities, and some legal and ethical issues in Issa's own background on today's show. The National Weather Service has issued its fall and winter forecast for our region, and we'll have details. Santee's city council members have voted to raise their salaries. And in El Cajon, 7 chambers of commerce will be hosting our region's first economic crimes forum coming up, and it's open to the public. Our newsmaker interview today is with La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber. On the second half of our show, he's working on an ordinance to legalize sale and manufacturing of recreational marijuana. In other local news, the Sequan tribe has purchased the former volunteer fire station in Dehesa. Albert the grizzly bear, a rescued animal and favorite among visitors at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine, has been euthanized. From Public News Service, a new federal proposal seeks to weaken air pollution rules on the oil and gas industry. Now, if you're looking for some fun festive events, Destination East County has the scoop on Grape Stomp's Powwow as a bluegrass festival, the Holy Smoke Barbecue, and many more activities coming up from Labor Day weekend through the end of September, all on today's show. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. Lakeside resident Dennis Richardson was appalled to discover that thousands of yellow fever mosquitoes were breeding in water dishes under potted plants at his house. His grandfather was a sanitation engineer who worked to eradicate yellow fever so that Americans could build the Panama Canal and later battled the yellow fever epidemic in Peru. Richardson says this work was deadly for most who did the work, as most of them got yellow fever. Yellow fever is fatal 20-50% of the time. Its most obvious symptom is yellow eyes and skin or jaundice. Fortunately, this disease is not present in San Diego currently, but it could take hold if one of these yellow fever mosquitoes were to bite a returning traveler with the disease. In the past, yellow fever epidemics have killed thousands of people in U.S. cities, including New Orleans, Memphis, Charleston, and as far north as Boston and Philadelphia. Aedes mosquitoes can also transmit other diseases, such as Zika virus, dengue fever, and chikungunya. Invasive Aedes mosquitoes fly low to the ground and most often bite legs and ankles. They're aggressive, active during the day, and breed in tiny amounts of water, even indoors. 3 species of Aedes mosquitoes are now found locally, and they're plaguing residents across East County. They are the Aedes aegypti, or yellow fever mosquito, Aedes aldopictus, or the Asian tiger mosquito, and the Aedes notoscriptus, known as the Aussie mozzie from Australia. Now, it's important to control all mosquitoes since West Nile virus is transmitted by the Culex mosquito, not the Aedes, and West Nile virus is a disease found locally that can be fatal. County Vector Control is conducting aerial larvicide drops on local waterways, and they're asking the public's help to report and eradicate these dangerous and annoying pests. The county will provide a free inspection of your property on request to identify mosquito breeding spots and advice on how to eliminate any mosquitoes found. You can call San Diego County Vector Control at 858-694-2888. A county map shows areas where the Aedes mosquitoes have been found this year in San Diego County, with clusters in the East County communities of Santee, Lakeside, El Cajon, La Mesa, and more. As the weather warms up, reports of mosquito activity are on the rise. The Cajon Valley Union School District sent a letter to parents warning of a sharp increase in mosquito populations and bites, And on the Nextdoor forums in Mount Helix and La Mesa, many residents posted about experiencing these aggressive ankle-biting mosquitoes. To prevent mosquito breeding, dump out and clean containers holding water indoors as well as outdoors at least every week to get rid of the standing water. Be aware that invasive Aedes mosquito eggs, however, can survive without water for months, so fill plant saucers with sand or fine gravel to prevent pools of water from forming. If you collect rainwater, be sure rain barrels are securely screened and sealed to prevent mosquito breeding. A female mosquito can fly over 30 feet down a narrow pipe or a gutter to find water. Aedes mosquitoes prefer to lay eggs in small containers, though, like plant saucers, discarded tires, buckets, watering cans, and even flower vases. Protect yourself from bites by putting screens on windows and doors to keep mosquitoes outside. Wear long sleeves and pants when outdoors to protect against bites, and apply insect repellent that contains DEET, oil of lemon eucalyptus, picaridin, or IR3535 to your exposed skin. Invasive Aedes mosquitoes are small. They're black and white with stripes on the legs and back, and they bite during the day. If you suspect you have them on your property, call the County Vector Control, and again, that number is 858-694-2888. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Public health officials are warning that visitors to popular tourist attractions in Southern California may have been exposed to measles in mid-August. A girl from New Zealand arrived at Los Angeles International Airport on August 11th and stayed at the Desert Palms Hotel in Anaheim. She visited Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure Park on August 12th, followed by stops at Universal Studios, the Chinese Theater, and Madame Tussauds Wax Museum on August 14th and 15th, before coming down with measles. In 2015, an outbreak that began at Disneyland sickened 147 people in several U.S. states, as well as Canada. Public health officials warn that measles is an airborne disease and is highly contagious. It may take 7 to 21 days after exposure to develop symptoms that often include a rash, red eyes, cough, runny nose, and fever. If you have measles symptoms, call your doctor instead of going into a clinic to avoid exposing other patients. The public is urged to be sure measles vaccinations are up to date. Measles vaccines are now recommended for international travelers. Infants aged 6 to 12 months should get one dose, and travelers over 1 year of age should get two doses, at least 4 weeks apart. According to the World Health Organization, measles cases nearly tripled in the first 7 months this year compared with the same period last year, and cases are on the rise around the world, including New Zealand, Europe, the U.S., and other locations. So far, no cases are linked to the New Zealand girl, who has recovered and returned home, but the incubation period is still active, so cases are anticipated. Unrelated measles cases have been reported in several Southern California counties. San Diego County has had two measles cases in the past week. The latest, a San Diego infant just under a year old, had contracted measles in the Philippines. The infant may have exposed the public at the 85-degree Bakery Cafe on Rosecrans, April 15th through April 18th, the Minsok Chon Korean Restaurant on Convoy Street on August 15th, and the Ralph's Grocery Store on Alta View Drive on August 16th. There is no treatment for measles, which can cause death in severe cases. Bed rest, fluids, and fever control are recommended. Treatment may be needed for complications such as ear infections or pneumonia. For more information on measles and immunizations to prevent the disease, you can call the County Health and Human Services Office at 866-358-2966 or visit sdiz.org.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
The California Highway Patrol is seeking the identity of a shooter who opened fire from a white or silver SUV on eastbound Interstate 8 near State Route 125 around 9:30 Monday night. The gunshots injured a man and a woman in a Nissan Sentra car. The victims were hospitalized with gunshot wounds to their legs and are in stable condition, Patch.com reports. CHP Officer Travis Garrow says it is not yet known whether the couple was targeted or if the shooting was random. If you have any information on these shootings, please call the CHP's El Cajon office at 619-401-2000. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Gerald Stevenson.
This is John Fistier with a Crime Beat report. A La Mesa couple has been arrested and charged in the death of their infant son. The 8-month-old baby was brought to the El Cajon Family Health Center on August 17th, suffering suspicious injuries as well as shortness of breath. The child was transferred to Rady Children's Hospital. A family acquaintance told 10 News that the injuries included a swollen brain and knuckle marks on the infant's forehead, as well as a dislocated arm and shoulder. El Cajon police determined that the injuries occurred at the family's home on Roland Knowles Drive in La Mesa. The parents, Joel Rodriguez Brownell and Helena Rodriguez, were arrested the next day and charged with assault and child abuse. One day later, the child died of his injuries, and murder charges were filed against both parents. According to the La Mesa Police Department, which is handling the investigation, bail has been set at $100,000 each. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gerald Stevenson with a Capitol Report. Increasingly erratic and irrational statements by President Donald Trump in recent weeks have raised questions in mainstream media and former Trump allies over whether he is experiencing dementia or mental illness. CNN business writer Brian Stelter is urging major media outlets to address the issue of the president's mental state. He writes, "I spent the week talking with major media figures at networks and newspapers, and that was the consensus. President Trump's behavior is getting worse in type and in frequency. It seems he's acting more erratic more often." He accused media of tiptoeing around the president's complete rejection of reality. Here are some examples of the president's increasingly bizarre actions. Trump missed a G7 meeting with the world leaders on climate change this past week. Asked by reporters about his absence at the session, Trump said, "We're having it in a little while," the Guardian newspaper in Britain reports. Trump alluded to godlike status when he looked heavenward and told reporters during a press conference on the trade war, "I am the chosen one," CNN reports. Trump retweeted a conspiracy theorist's claim that he is like the King of Israel to Jewish people. It reads, "They love him like he is the second coming of God." Trump also claimed that Jewish Americans who don't vote for him are disloyal. He repeatedly suggested dropping nuclear bombs on hurricanes several times, a bizarre idea that the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration's Hurricane Research Division has debunked, stating it would cause widespread radioactive contamination of coastal areas. Trump suggested the Federal Reserve Chairman is an enemy and likened him to China's premier in a tweet, precipitating a stock market drop. Trump sought to buy Greenland, NPR reports, then canceled a state visit to Denmark and snubbed the nation's queen, calling the female prime minister nasty after the Danish leadership refused to sell the resource-rich Danish territory to him. Former White House Press Secretary Anthony Scaramucci said earlier this month that the president is mentally declining, the Washington Post reported. Former Republican Congressman Joe Walsh has announced a primary challenge to Trump, who he calls unfit. Walsh says of the president, "He's nuts. He's erratic. He's cruel. He stokes bigotry. He's incompetent. He doesn't know what he's doing." Of note, however, Walsh has himself faced criticisms over comments he has made on his radio show that he admits were racist. George Conway, the husband of Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway, says the president's mental health is a matter of urgency. He tweeted, his condition is getting worse. Conway further says that all Americans should be thinking seriously now about Trump's mental condition and psychological state. Trump has responded to the criticisms with a barrage of insults, accusing Conway of being jealous of his wife's success and attacking reporters who have questioned his mental stability. Some Democratic leaders are also speaking out. Presidential candidate and former Vice President Joe Biden said, while campaigning in New Hampshire, that Trump is becoming more and more unhinged, citing the president's messianic self-references, his use of anti-Semitic expressions, and continuing references to migrant invasions, even though this wording has been touted by multiple accused mass shooters. Dr. Lance Dodes, former assistant psychiatry professor at Harvard, has gone so far as to call Trump's mental state psychotic, Newsweek reports this week, further suggesting that the most powerful man in the world could make decisions such as waging war and launching nuclear weapons based on emotional reactions, not logic. Dodes concludes that the president can't stand anyone that disagrees with him, and the more you challenge him, the more unhinged he becomes, the more paranoid. And he concludes, the more violent, potentially. The Constitution does provide a remedy for removing a mentally incompetent president through the 25th Amendment, which requires approval of 2/3 of Congress and top cabinet officials, as well as medical officials. That remedy is separate from impeachment, which is reserved for high crimes and misdemeanors. But thus far, leaders of Congress and the president's cabinet have not taken any actions toward evaluating the president's mental fitness.
Daryl Issa, who retired in January from the 49th Congressional District, has set up an exploratory committee and put up a campaign website to run for embattled Congressman Duncan Hunter's neighboring 50th Congressional District seat. Issa says, "I have received such a tremendous outpouring of encouragement from supporters inside the district and around the state and across the nation." The Republican congressman was best known on Capitol Hill for leading numerous investigations into the Obama administration, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and Attorney General Eric Holder, when ISA chaired the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. One of those investigations landed him on the most corrupt members of Congress list compiled by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, in 2012. The bipartisan list that year named 7 Democrats and 13 Republicans. According to CREW, ISA illegally disclosed information from a sealed wiretap by inserting it into the congressional record, then hid behind his constitutional protections as a member of Congress to avoid consequences. CREW Executive Director Melanie Sloan criticized ISA at the time for claiming to defend the law, yet placing himself above it to suit his political agenda. ISA is among several prominent politicians running for the seat held by Hunter, who goes on trial in January on 60 counts of federal corruption charges, including spending campaign funds on a lavish personal lifestyle and falsifying reports to hide the thefts. The trial commences after the December filing deadline to run for office, but so far, Hunter has stated he has no plans to resign. If convicted, he could face years in prison. His wife, Margaret, has pled guilty to one count of conspiracy and is cooperating with prosecutors. ISA, like Carl DeMaio, another prominent Republican in this race, does not live in the district, which is not required in federal races. Other declared candidates include El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and former Escondido Mayor Sam Abed, both Republicans, Democrat Amar Campanajar, and independent candidate Helen Horvath. ISA retired after redistricting made his 49th Congressional District a political battleground due to registration shifts. The 2018 election was won by Democrat Michael Levine. According to Roll Call, ISA was the wealthiest man in Congress for a decade, and he has a net worth of $283 million, making him capable of largely self-funding his campaign. His website has an Issues tab, but does not yet list any positions. During his 15-year tenure in Congress, ISA authored 16 bills that became law, according to GovTrack. Most were minor measures dealing with renaming post offices and a border patrol station. Another eliminated reporting requirements for many government agencies. Two others authorized transfer of lands to the Pechanga Band of Luseno Mission Indians. ISA, the son of a Lebanese-American immigrant, made his fortune largely in a car alarm company that he founded. He served in the Army in a bomb disposal unit for 3 years, receiving a hardship discharge after his father suffered a heart attack. After the discharge, ISA was charged with car theft, but The charge was dismissed by a judge. He was later convicted of carrying a concealed weapon after an officer found a gun in his vehicle following a traffic stop, according to the New Yorker. Issa has later said that the conviction was expunged. His voting record in Congress reflects largely pro-business and conservative stances on most issues, with mainly anti-environmental votes and an overall lack of support for civil liberties. During his final year in Congress, GovTrack reports, Issa received a 90% rating from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, 80% from the conservative Freedom Works, but only 9% from the American Civil Liberties Union and 3% from the League of Conservation Voters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. Daryl Issa, who retired in January from the 49th Congressional District, has set up an exploratory committee and put up a campaign website to run for embattled Congressman Duncan Hunter's neighboring 50th Congressional District seat. Issa says, "I have received such a tremendous outpouring of encouragement from supporters inside the district and around the state and across the nation." The Republican congressman was best known on Capitol Hill for leading numerous investigations into the Obama administration, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, and Attorney General Eric Holder, when Issa chaired the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. One of those investigations landed him on the most corrupt members of Congress list compiled by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, in 2012. The bipartisan list that year named 7 Democrats and 13 Republicans. According to CREW, Issa illegally disclosed information from a sealed wiretap by inserting it into the congressional record, then hid behind his constitutional protections as a member of Congress to avoid consequences. CREW Executive Director Melanie Sloan criticized Issa at the time for claiming to defend the law, yet placing himself above it to suit his political agenda. Issa is among several prominent politicians running for the seat held by Hunter, who goes on trial in January on 60 counts of federal corruption charges, including spending campaign funds on a lavish personal lifestyle and falsifying reports to hide the thefts. The trial commences after the December filing deadline to run for office, but so far, Hunter has stated he has no plans to resign. If convicted, he could face years in prison. His wife, Margaret, has pled guilty to one count of conspiracy and is cooperating with prosecutors. Issa, like Carl DiMaio, another prominent Republican in this race, does not live in the district, which is not required in federal races. Other declared candidates include El Cajon Mayor Bill Wells and former Escondido Mayor Sam Abed, both Republicans, Democrat Amar Campanajar, and independent candidate Helen Horvath. Issa retired after redistricting made his 49th Congressional District a political battleground due to registration shifts. The 2018 election was won by Democrat Michael Levine. According to Roll Call, Issa was the wealthiest man in Congress for a decade, and he has a net worth of $283 million, making him capable of largely self-funding his campaign. His website has an Issues tab, but does not yet list any positions. During his 15-year tenure in Congress, Issa authored 16 bills that became law, according to GovTrack. Most were minor measures dealing with renaming post offices and a border patrol station. Another eliminated reporting requirements for many government agencies. Two others authorized transfer of lands to the Pechanga Band of Luseno Mission Indians. Issa, the son of a Lebanese-American immigrant, made his fortune largely in a car alarm company that he founded. He served in the Army in a bomb disposal unit for 3 years, receiving a hardship discharge after his father suffered a heart attack. After the discharge, Issa was charged with car theft, but the charge was dismissed by a judge. He was later convicted of carrying a concealed weapon after an officer found a gun in his vehicle following a traffic stop, according to the New Yorker. Issa has later said that the conviction was expunged. His voting record in Congress reflects largely pro-business and conservative stances on most issues, with mainly anti-environmental votes and an overall lack of support for civil liberties. During his final year in Congress, GovTrack reports, Issa received a 90% rating from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, 80% from the conservative Freedom Works, but only 9% from the American Civil Liberties Union and 3% from the League of Conservation Voters. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Santee's city council members have voted to give themselves a raise. Their salaries will be going up by 2.5% this fiscal year and again in the next fiscal year. That's far lower than salary hikes recommended by the city's Salary Setting Advisory Committee back in June, which recommended boosting council salaries by 30% and the mayor's salary by a whopping 50%. Amid objections that elected officials might be seeking to enrich themselves, the council rejected such steep hikes and instead made clear that they would not take any increase higher than the 2.5% raise the city employees are getting. In addition to pay raises, council members and the mayor will also be receiving modest increases for their gas allowances, an extra $10 a month for council members and $50 more for the mayor. They will also receive a new technology allowance proposed by Councilmember Laura Covell, $50 a month for council members and $80 for the mayor, which can be used for devices such as smartphones, tablets, or laptop computers. Total salaries with those benefits will total just over $2,000 a month for council members and about $2,600 a month for the mayor. The August 15th vote was 4-1, with Councilman Stephen Houlihan opposed. Noting that the city is entering difficult financial times, he said, "I think the city council should take no raise." The council also unanimously approved waiving development impact fees for accessory dwelling units of ADUs, also called granny flats, for a 5-year testing period. The council agreed that making such units, typically garage conversions to living spaces, or smaller units located on an existing lot, would help families and provide much-needed affordable housing. Reporting from Santee for East County Magazine, this is Jonathan Goetz.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
The public is invited to attend the first ever Economic Crimes Forum in East County, hosted by 7 Chambers of Commerce. The event will be held on Tuesday, September 10th at the Grossmont College Theater from 2 to 4:30 p.m. Attendees will learn how scams and cybercrimes impact businesses and the community. Experts from the District Attorney's Office will teach those who attend how to protect themselves and their businesses from becoming victims of fraud and other economic-related crimes. District Attorney Summer Steffen says, "We have an entire division dedicated to prosecuting economic crimes and holding the perpetrators accountable. But our prosecutors and investigators are also using their expertise to stop these crimes from happening in the first place and to protect the business community." The 7 Chambers of Commerce hosting the Economic Crimes Forum are the San Diego East County Chamber of Commerce, the East County Economic Development Council, the Spring Valley Chamber of Commerce, the Lakeside Chamber of Commerce, the La Mesa Chamber of Commerce, the Alpine Chamber of Commerce, and the Santee Chamber of Commerce. Anyone interested in attending should RSVP to Kathy Castle by emailing info@lakesidechamber.org or calling 619-561-1031. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Goetz.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. And today we are back with La Mesa Councilman Bill Baber, and our hot topic of the day is recreational marijuana. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back, Miriam.
So, you have been working on a possible ordinance for La Mesa for the city council to legalize recreational marijuana. The city already has medical marijuana. Tell us what the reason is for that.
The easiest way to do is walk a little bit through, quickly through some of the history. In 2016, the voters of the state in Prop 64 legalized recreational cannabis. Sometimes we call it officially adult use, but recreational.
Right.
Medicinal had been legalized for many years before
then.
Meanwhile, in 2016, the citizens of La Mesa passed an initiative to allow medicinal dispensaries and cultivation and manufacturing. So these two things happened at once. The state legalized recreational, and La Mesa voters said, we want medicinal dispensaries. So it took us a couple years to work through how do you do the permit processing for these medicinal dispensaries. In 2018, we figured at the city that recreational adult use was the future. We passed a tax ordinance to say we can tax both medicinal and adult use. We can go back and explain there's a there's a certain kind of medicinal that is not taxed, but and that set the framework for bringing us to adult use. So since that, about a year, we've been working on the ordinance to allow the dispensaries and that are currently in line to sell medicinal to just co-locate and sell recreational. So they're the same shop is selling the same types of products, but instead of just only selling it to medicinal patients, they'll be able to sell it to anyone who's an adult under the state law.
So that makes some sense if they've got a track record of being open and they haven't been a bunch of police complaints or something like that, or neighbor complaints.
Right. We want our,
and they'd be first in line to get the recreation.
That's right. Plus, they've jumped through the labyrinth of our permitting process to actually get a dispensary open. That's not easy.
Yeah.
These are complicated things to run. They have to be heavily capitalized. Mm-hmm. You don't open up a dispensary overnight.
Right. Now, I mean, you're a Republican, and I understand that one of the arguments that you've told me before in favor of this, some might be surprised and saying, well, gee, that sounds like a lefty liberal issue here. But I know you've told me that in some of the cities, in La Mesa included, where there were citizens' ballot initiatives to legalize things like medical or recreational, sometimes the wording is kind of vague on those, and cities wind up getting sued over things, over, you know, distances or just where you can put these things. And so part of your reason for wanting the council to take the initiative of passing an ordinance was so that you didn't have a situation of citizens saying, let's vote to legalize recreational, and maybe they impose, you know, requirements that are problematic.
Okay. I'd say on this issue, I'm more libertarian in that if there's a legal business, which it's legal in California, we have a duty to set up a fair, just framework to allow that legal business to operate. Before 2016, we didn't have to worry about that, but it's legal, and people who want to run legal dispensaries have a right to do it in California, and we're here to have a fair, just system so that they can do business, and also that they, you know, their neighbors are protected and the normal land use issues. So to allow them to move forward is good for the city. Obviously, the city gets to tax it, so there's revenue that comes back to the city,
right,
too. So we're trying to make it work. Probably the most complicated thing we have in La Mesa, we just don't have that much commercial or industrial space. We're mostly a bedroom community. So if you think of where our industrial center is up on the Mesa High Street, where the one dispensary is, and we've got our industrial
breweries, a winery.
And we have construction places up there. We've got all sorts of folks. But that's our entire industrial area.
Right. So it's not near schools. It's not near churches or other things people might be concerned about.
Well, not an industrial area. Then the commercial areas where you can have a dispensary, those, if you think of El Cajon Boulevard, University Avenue, and places, you know, along Baltimore, Lake Murray, those are our commercial centers. So you might see a dispensary at a commercial center, but you're not going to see a manufacturing, cultivation, or testing other than the industrial center. So why do I tell you all that? We have very little space to allow these folks to operate. Santee, El Cajon, San Diego has way, 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 way more space to do this. So we have probably more businesses who want to be in La Mesa than we have space to handle right now.
So how many dispensaries are licensed right now or in the pipeline on track to get a permit?
You know, this number changes daily.
And it's medical.
Only one is operating right now. That's the Grove.
Right, in the industrial area.
And then we have about 11 more that have cleared planning commission but haven't opened for a variety of reasons. Some are waiting for us to finish the adult use ordinance. Some haven't got their all of their permits through, or they haven't done all their tenant improvements, or they need a fire inspection, they haven't got it, any of these other things to open up. So there's more in the pipeline, but only one's functioning right now.
I'm curious whether, since you've had one legal dispensary open, have you seen any difference in the problem of illegal dispensaries that at least for a while were popping up? It was like whack-a-mole. They'd close one and 10 others would open up.
One of the reasons we move forward to allow legal dispensaries gives us the revenue and sort of the moral authority to and the allies in the business to close out the illegal ones. We spent a lot of time and money with our city attorney's office and the police trying to rid Elkhorn Boulevard and University Avenue of these illegal pot shops. And we've cleaned most of them out. That was difficult. We'd get rid of them one place, they'd pop up another one. So by setting up a regulated legal system, it undermines the illegal ones. They're going to end up going to the county or Santee or El Cajon. They're out of La Mesa.
Spring Valley is struggling with that. The county has not made it easy to open. In fact, they've kind of outlawed any kind of dispensary except a couple that are grandfathered in. And so what we're seeing now in Spring Valley is this rash of illegal ones that keep opening, and they're not just selling marijuana. The sheriffs have told me that they've found methamphetamines and cocaine being sold in there. There might be adulterated drugs. So do you believe that having the legal framework, is there a process in place to make sure that what they're selling is actually A, just marijuana, and B, that it's passed some kind of quality or purity standard?
Absolutely. The best way to get rid of the black market is to have an open market that's regulated, taxed, and that the police participate in supervising and to make it safe. It's the best way to do it. So the cities and the communities around us who say, well, we don't want any cannabis dispensaries, you have them. They're just illegal. Okay. So what you're really saying to us is we will tolerate the illegal one. There are other folks who say, well, we're not going to have cannabis dispensaries. They just have their eyes closed. We can see them right across the border from La Mesa when they're in the county.
Exactly.
So,
and the state has some requirements, too, for quality and purity testing and things, too. So is it actually a state-regulated industry, not just a city-regulated one?
Well, let me handle it two ways. The land use, what operates and what business, the more we have a regulated framework, we're pushing the illegal ones out of La Mesa. And, then they become the county's problem or Elkhorn's problem. Now, in terms of the product, a regulated business has to have state-tested products. If you come into a dispensary, you'll see there'll be little jars that are sealed, and they'll have a little tag on them to say when they were tested by the state. So people who care about the purity of the product, both for quality and for safety, you can know they're regulated by the state. You don't get that in a illegal place.
And also the potency. So you know when you get in, if this is a low potency or a high potency. Yeah. Some of them even have
It's a
products.
Regulated business, so you know what you're going to buy, and the state's moving forward on that. So we think it's good. I saw an article, though, I think it was a day or two ago, the state still doesn't think that the regulated industry will pass the black market for another 5 years. The black market is still strong, and so many cities don't want to get into the regulated. So they're, in effect, they're codependent. They're enablers of the black market.
Right? Yeah. I mean, now there was just a lawsuit where the ruling just came out in the last day or so as we're taping this bill. Saying that the city of San Diego didn't do a good enough job requiring, environmental review when they put these in. Is that something that is a concern?
Yeah, that case was interesting because the city of San Diego took the position that just permitting a dispensary was not a project that tripped extensive review under the Environmental Review Act. And they won at the trial court, they won at the appellate court, but at the Supreme Court said, no, it might, so go back and look at it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. So basically cities—
Things like traffic and—
Yeah, under that case, we'll have to take a look at it. And I understand that the plaintiffs who were a coalition of medicinal patients saying, hey, if you don't allow us, if you restrict where your dispensaries are, it might make us drive a lot further, which increases traffic, which is probably true.
And greenhouse gases.
The La Mesa draft ordinance, which we're still working on, we don't have any caps on it or restrictions on that. The market itself is probably going to be the restrictions. San Diego and Chula Vista both said some cap based on council districts, which seems arbitrary and political. We don't have anything like that. It's basically anyone can open up in any of our commercial or industrial areas as long as they're not within a sensitive use. And the sensitive use issues is schools and churches. And we're trying to work that out. We've had an amazing amount of litigation on how you draw a line between two dispensaries or a line between a preschool over.
Is it as a crow flies?
Is it as a crow fly? Is it a path of travel? Is the path of travel, if you cut across the street, you take a sidewalk? I've never imagined how many ways you can define travel, path of travel, until I saw dispensary and dispensary challenges.
Very interesting.
Sorry, that's really arcane. Probably bored everybody.
No, I think it's fascinating. So you had a meeting recently with the industry representatives from the legal cannabis industry. What were their main concerns?
We had a packed crowd because we were rolling out the adult use ordinance. Think of the industry as sort of two branches. There's the dispensary, the storefront, people walk in and buy stuff. And then there's the suppliers, the people who test, the people who manufacture. Manufacturing in this context means you're distilling the THC and then you're putting it in a product like a gummy worm or a brownie or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have indoor cultivation. So sort of the supplying folks have one set of issues. They're in the industrial park, mm-hmm. and then the dispensaries have another set of issues. The easy thing and the good thing for dispensaries are the folks who have already jumped through every hoop in to do medicinal, most of them are going to be able to do adult use. I say most because we haven't worked out all of the adult use path of travel rules and how close they can be to one. But most of them will. So the thinking of it is, if you've been with us for a year and you've jumped through every hoop, we're not going to make you start over again. Because there's very little difference between selling medicinal and selling adult use.
The manufacturing end of it, which would only be in the industrial area, not these other commercial areas that could have dispensaries, does that include the manufacture of the hash oil? I know there's been some issues with explosions at some of these, mostly illegal ones so far, but is that something, are you going to have some safety requirements in there to make sure to try to prevent that?
This is another reason why you should be in the regulated business, because the state heavily regulates the rules for manufacturing to prevent accidents.
Right.
If you're in the black market, things go bad. All of these issues come back when you're a city trying to have a fair and open and rational cannabis policy. You have your normal land use, dealing with neighborhoods and dealing with building permits and fire and electrical inspections. That's, you deal with any business. But in cannabis, we're competing with the black market. And so we have a very low tax rate in La Mesa. Why? Because if we don't get our regulated pricing down, people are still going to buy it at the black market.
Good point.
But the black market has all sorts of things. You don't know what you're going to get there. You have issues when people try and manufacture it illegally. The regulated market is taking over and filling the space, and the state's behind it. And it's good for consumers. It's good for safety. But it's not going to happen overnight. I saw an article that basically said it's going to take 5 years to catch up. And, you know, people are used to buying from their friend in the black market, and now you want them to go into dispensary. It's going to take time. I'm sure after Prohibition ended in the early 30s that people were still buying from moonshiners.
Speakeasies and
even when it was legal to go into a bar and buy beer. It takes time to move people from the black market to the open market, but we got to start somewhere.
Now, are you going to be doing some outreach? We mentioned you've had a meeting with the industry representatives. Will there be some outreach to the public, to neighbors in these areas, so they can have their input?
In terms of dispensaries who've already qualified, we've already done that because they've gone through the planning commission and the neighbors had their notices and all that. So the folks we're passing through are people who have already passed through. They've already done all that. The manufacturing side in the industrial area, most of the neighbors are other industrial uses. So yes, there might be some complications there, but there aren't any residents anywhere near the industrial area. That's why the area is zoned industrial.
But if people have a concern or question or they just want to know more about it.
Call the city, check it out. If you have a complaint about a specific dispensary that's open, you can send that in too. But as I said before, you may be complaining about an illegal dispensary, then we need to shut it down. Very few complaints about the legal ones.
That's good to know. Now, when is this coming up, do you anticipate, on the council agenda?
If we get all the work done, and it's a lot of work, and our staff's been great. I got to give Kerry Kusiak, who works for us, a lot of kudos because he has spent a lot of his time at work trying to make this thing happen. We hope that we can get a first reading on September 10th, and if that goes well, the second reading would be September 24th. Then you add 30 days for referendum period, so that would be November 1 ballpark. And then it's going to take a good 60 days to roll out all of the permitting infrastructure we need to make this happen. But the goal would be that you would be able to buy recreational cannabis at a La Mesa dispensary by January 1 of 2020. See if we hit that. We only have one open dispensary, so it's probably going to be there.
So a very happy new year for the folks that are the adult use cannabis.
Yeah,
folks.
I'm happy for them. And and once again, if you're listening and you're buying from the black market, think about coming over to the regulated market, and you're going to get a safe product, and you're welcome in La Mesa to buy.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much, Bill, for taking the time to join us today. Listeners, this is Councilman Bill Baber from the La Mesa City Council we're speaking with, if you've tuned in late. And we appreciate you coming in to speak with us on the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
Going, going, gone. A county auction sold off the former Dehesa Fire Station as surplus property on August 6th. The buyer is the Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation, which purchased the site for $650,000. The site was donated to the county for use as a volunteer fire station in 1976, then transferred to the San Diego Rural Fire Protection District following consolidation of a dozen fire departments. After creation of the County Fire Authority in 2008, the property reverted back to the county. The site on Dehesa Road is near the entrance to the Sequan Casino and Resort, which recently added a 12-story hotel and conference facilities. The tribe has not yet announced whether it will retain the site as a fire station or convert it to some other use. The property is currently zoned agricultural. Formation of the County Fire Authority, run by CAL FIRE, means some communities had volunteer stations located close to CAL FIRE stations. Elimination of volunteer fire departments has led to various strategies for dealing with surplus stations. In Boulevard, a former volunteer station is used for community meetings. The former volunteer station in Julian, however, remains vacant as multiple legal actions proceed, including one that seeks to reverse the county takeover. Another action claims the land should revert back to a Native American land trust, which received the property from a donor under the condition that it be used as a station by the volunteer Julian Cuyamaca Fire Department. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
Albert, a rescued grizzly bear, won hearts and made headlines when he arrived in Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine along with his sister, Cherry Bomb, and two Himalayan black bears back in 2014. But after Albert developed severe breathing problems, he was examined under anesthesia by veterinarians who found cancer in the bear's airways. Due to the poor prognosis, the bear was euthanized. Bobby Brink, founder and director of the Lions, Tigers, and Bears Rescue Facility, says the loss breaks her heart because Albert was a special rescue who defied all the odds, overcoming a tragic beginning and physical malfunctions from poor nutrition and confinement as a cub. Albert arrived at the facility 5 years ago after being rescued in North Carolina and making the 5,000-mile cross-country journey to Alpine. At first, the bear was hesitant to emerge into his new forever home, but soon made the leap, splashing in a large pool in his enclosure and winning the hearts of keepers, volunteers, and visitors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fisteer.
Oil and gas companies will no longer have to put in pollution controls that help in the fight against climate change if a revised rule announced by the feds on Thursday is finalized. The EPA is revising the Obama-era methane waste rule, which required companies to capture excess methane rather than burn it or let it escape into the air. Mitch Jones, Climate and Energy Program Director with Food and Water Watch, says methane is a destructive greenhouse gas.
Over a 20-year period, methane traps 86 times more heat in our atmosphere than carbon dioxide does. Those emissions are really forcing short-term rapid heating and making climate change much worse.
EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler, himself a former energy lobbyist, defended the change, saying it lifts an unnecessary burden on the oil and gas industry. The 60-day public comment period on regulations.gov will commence once the rule is published in the Federal Register. Jones says some oil and gas companies actually didn't want the rule rolled back because it allowed them to claim that their operations are climate conscious.
They're actually using the existing rule to greenwash a climate-destroying product, which is fracked gas.
California has a large oil and gas industry that is spread across 10 counties, but is most active in the Central Valley. Studies have linked methane pollution to increased incidence of low birth weight babies and respiratory disease in communities upwind of fossil fuel facilities. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County features berry picking at Julian Farm and Orchard, the Barona Powwow, Julian's Fall Art Show, Sky Hunters in Julian, and a Laurel and Hardy comedy night in Spring Valley.
Plus, we have a preview of coming events, including the Sequan Powwow, Julian Grape Stomp Festa, Campo Grape Picking and Stomping Party, the Ramona Grape Stomp, Fall at the Farm, plus concerts and car shows in El Cajon.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more. Julian Farm and Orchard has 24 acres with over 2,000 berry plants. On Saturday and Sundays from now through September, you can pick blackberries and raspberries from 12 to 3 p.m. The farm is located on Highway 78 on the Santa Isabel side of the highway. You can find information at julianminingcompany.com, owned by the same family, and click on the You Pick tab for the juicy details on berry picking.
The 49th Annual Barona Powwow takes place Friday, August 30th through Sunday, September 1st at the Barona Sports Complex on the Barona Indian Reservation. The public is welcome to come watch native dancers and drummers from across the nation compete at the powwow, where you can also find craft vendors and food, such as tacos made with Native American fry bread. A full schedule of events is available at barona-nsn.gov/2019powwow.
The Julian Arts Guild invites you to their three-day fall art show over Labor Day weekend, August 30th through September 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Julian Town Hall. You can enjoy viewing artwork, enter an art raffle, or purchase art to take home. There is also a Meet the Artists reception on Friday, August 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. More information is available at julianartsguild.org.
Sky Hunters invites you to William Heiss County Park in Julian on Saturday, August 31st from 5 to 6 p.m. to learn about hawks, owls, falcons, and eagles. Have you ever wondered what you would do if you found a sick or injured raptor, or if there were any laws to protect these magnificent birds? This program is not only educational, but also allows you to view these amazing birds closer than you normally would in the wild. For more information, call the park at 760-765-0650.
Saps at Sea, the San Diego chapter of the Sons of the Desert, the official Laurel and Hardy Fan Society, invites you to their next meeting on August 31st at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. The doors open at 6:30 for the 7 p.m. show. This month, you can see Stan and Ollie escape the law and end up at the top of a skyscraper under construction in Liberty with an accompanying musical score played by the Saps' own Russ Peck. This month's guest comedians are Thelma Todd and Patsy Kelly in Air Fright. After intermission, the Saps will screen Flying Deuces. For more information, visit the Saps at Sea San Diego Facebook page.
The Sequan Band of the Kumeyaay Nation will hold its 30th annual powwow from Friday evening, September 6th, through Sunday, September 8th, at the Sequan Powwow Ground in El Cajon. The event features bird singing and Native American dance competitions, drumming, Native arts and crafts vendors, foods, and more. For details on the powwow, visit the calendar on our website at eastcountymagazine.org.
Fall is harvest season at East County's wineries. On September 7th, the 23rd annual Julian Grape Stomp Festa will be held at Mangini Winery from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can join in the old world tradition by kicking off your shoes and squishing grapes beneath your feet. There is an admission cost as well as an optional VIP package that includes shaded seating, a gourmet cheese platter, snacks, and more. For full details or tickets, check out visitjulian.com and click on the September 7th Grape Stomp Festa event on their calendar.
Campo Creek Vineyards in Campo will host a grape picking and stomping party, complete with barbecue on September 7th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event admission includes barbecue tri-tip, chicken provided by Hefty Boy Barbecue, and one beverage. Additional drink tickets are available along with wine by the glass, water, and soda. RSVPs are requested by September 1st at 619-478-2222 or at campocreekvineyards.com.
The annual Ramona Grape Stomp will be held on Saturday, September 14th from 2 to 7 p.m. at the Ramona Outdoor Community Center. Guests are invited to take part in the Grape Stomp competition or squish grapes just for fun. You can also sample award-winning local wines and craft beers, do some early holiday shopping with over 40 artisans and merchants. And for kids, there will be face painting and other children's activities. For tickets and more information, you can visit RamonaGrapeStomp.com.
Julian Farm and Orchard invites you to Fall at the Farm each weekend from September 21st through October 31st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. The fun includes hayrides, apple cider pressing, a pumpkin patch, farm animals, berry and apple picking. You can also see an apple pie making demonstration or try your hand at archery, candle dipping, or axe throwing. You can find more information at julianminingcompany.com and click on the You Pick link for activities at Julian Farm and Orchard under the same family ownership.
El Cajon's popular dinner and a concert series is held each Friday evening at Prescott Promenade in downtown El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. Shows will continue through September. You can bring a picnic dinner or dine early at one of the many nearby restaurants before rocking out to the outdoor concerts. In September, the lineup includes Stars on the Water Yacht Rock on September 6th, a Tom Petty tribute by the Petty Breakers on September 13th, the Mighty Untouchables with contemporary and dance music on September 20th, and Back to the Gardens Beatles show on September 27th for the season finale with a special 6:30 start time. For full details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
El Cajon's classic cruise nights continue in the fall months each Wednesday from 5 to 8 p.m. along Main Street in the heart of downtown El Cajon. For a full schedule of events, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more in the calendar and events section at our website, eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back soon with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County!
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine Radio Show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show.